Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Real Artists' Ship, January 1984. By the fall of 1983, we had committed to announcing and shipping the Macintosh at Apple's January 1984 shareholders meeting. The failure of the Twiggy disk drive almost caused us to be late, but the new Sony 3.5-inch disk drive seemed to solve all of our problems. The rest of the hardware was ready, and the ROMs were frozen in early September and sent out for fabrication. All that remained was to finish the system software and our two applications, MacWrite and MacPaint. The software team worked hard over the Christmas break of 1983. The Finder still wasn't finished, and there were lots of performance problems, especially when copying files between disks. There was a lot of integration testing to do, like cutting and pasting between applications, and testing each application's interaction with desk accessories. As the new year rolled around, it was clear that we were running out of time. The software team worked around the clock, finding, testing, and fixing problems. Every employee in the building was drafted as a tester, and we held a series of dinners where Apple bought catered food for anyone who stayed late to help test the software. We were exhausted, and progress was slow. There were still bugs that we hadn't gotten to the bottom of yet, and our deadline was less than a week away. Late on a Friday evening, we convinced ourselves that we needed an extra week or two to fix the remaining problems. Steve Jobs was on the East Coast along with Bob Belleville and Mike Murray doing press for the Mac introduction. We arranged for a conference call with them early Sunday morning to tell them about the slip. Jerome Coonan, our software manager, spoke for the team as we gathered around the speakerphone. He proposed that we ship demo software to the dealers for the introduction and update all the customers with final software a few weeks later. We thought Jerome was pretty persuasive as we held our breath waiting for Steve to respond.
"No way! There's no way we're slipping!"
Steve responded. The room let out a collective gasp.
"You guys have been working on this stuff for months now. Another couple of weeks isn't going to make that much of a difference. You may as well get it over with. Just make it as good as you can. You'd better get back to work."
We did manage to wrangle an extra couple of days by virtue of working the weekend and moving the deadline to 6 a.m. Monday morning when the factory opened, instead of Friday afternoon. We agreed to go home and rest up, and then come into work on Monday for the final push. That final week was one of the most intense I have ever experienced. Steve wanted Bill Atkinson and myself to fly to New York to present a Mac to Mick Jagger, but I decided that I needed to stay in Cupertino to help fix all the software bugs. Some of us paused work momentarily to be photographed for magazines like Newsweek and Rolling Stone, making others on the team feel terrible about being left out. At times, the atmosphere was pretty tense. Friday rolled around, and it was clear there were still too many bugs in both the Finder and MacWrite. Randy Wigginton brought in a gigantic bag of chocolate-covered espresso beans, which, along with medicinal quantities of caffeinated beverages, helped us forgo sleep entirely for the last couple of days. We started doing release cycles that were only a few hours apart, re-releasing every time we fixed a significant problem. When a new release was ready, we would all grab it and start testing again. Around 2 a.m. on Sunday, I stumbled across a bug in the clipboard code. I thought I knew what it might be, but I was so tired that I didn't want to deal with it. I tried to pretend that I didn't see the problem, but I was also too tired to sustain a pretense. Steve Capps was watching my expression and knew there was something wrong. He grilled me about the problem and then helped me craft a fix, since I was too tired to do it on my own. Around 4 a.m., we had a release where everything seemed to be going wrong. Even MacPaint was crashing, which was usually rock solid. But our final release at around 5:30 a.m. seemed to be much better. The worst problems seemed to have receded, and we thought we might have a release candidate. We all focused on testing the final release as much as we could until 6 a.m. when Jerome would have to leave to drive it to the factory. It looked pretty good, but soon someone found a potential showstopper. The system seemed to hang when a blank disk was inserted during Mac write, and the disk didn't start formatting like it should have. I realized that the software had probably hung while waiting for an event. I reached out and tapped on the spacebar, and formatting commenced. Jerome thought the bug was bad enough to hold up the release, but he left to drive it to the factory anyway, figuring they needed to start duplication, even if it was just going to be a demo release. The sun had already risen, and the software team began to scatter and go home to relax. We weren't sure if we were finished or not, and it felt strange to have nothing to do after working so hard for so long. Instead of going home, Don Denman and I sat on a couch in the lobby in a daze and watched the accounting and marketing people trickle into work. We must have been quite a sight. Everybody could tell that we had been there all night. I hadn't been home or had a shower for 3 days. Around 8:30, Steve Jobs arrived, and as soon as he saw us, he immediately asked if we had made it. I explained the formatting bug to him, and he thought it wasn't enough to be a showstopper, which meant that we were finally finished. I drove home to Palo Alto and collapsed on my bed, thinking that I would sleep for the next day or two.